Are you still planning to leave for India?
I have my sister's blessing, as well as my mother's. And the Queen herself has apparently saved our families from utter ruin.
You love your family dearly.
As much as you love yours.
I was fearful of losing you. It is why I could not visit you after your accident. I could not bring myself to... I love you. I have loved you from the moment we raced each other in that park. I have loved you at every dance, on every walk, every time we've been together and every time we've been apart. You do not have to accept it, you do not have to embrace it, or even allow it. Knowing you, you probably will not, but you must know it. In your heart. You must feel it, because I do. I love you.
I do not know what to say.
You do not have to say
anything. I do not think there is anything else to say. Other than I love you too.
I want a life that suits us both. I know I am imperfect, but I will humble myself before you because I cannot imagine my life without you, and that is why I wish to marry you.
You do know there'll never be a day where you do not vex me.
Is that a promise, Kathane Jama?
Yes. Yes, it is a promise.
Well, then. It seems the two of us are finally seeing eye to eye on something.
I suppose we are.
All the way from Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to Bridgerton with Mary and Blake. It's a podcast dedicated to Bridgerton on Netflix. So sit back, relax, and let's get ready to spill the tea. Hello, everyone. My name is Mary Larson.
Oh, my name is Blake, and I am such a softie. I cried in this episode.
Why?
Multiple times. When he calls it Kathane Sharma.
Oh, yes.
Oh, like the actual pronunciation of her real name, Yes. Not the anglicized version of her name.
Yes.
Oh, and then we also, we got the whole thing with Gregory and Anthony when they're talking at the same time, too.
Oh, my gosh.
Listen,
so much.
I'm not going to get into that right now, but all I'm telling you, is that the waterworks were out. Waterworks were, pumping, baby, in this episode. And I did not, truly, honest to God, and I know I'm being a little funny about it, but truly, I did not expect that to happen by the end of this episode.
No.
I just didn't. Because as much as I love Bridgerton, it's not that kind of show for me. It's not This Is Us for me. Mm-hmm. It's not The Leftovers for me. Like, it doesn't hit me in that emotional spot.
Yes.
But knowing all the things that Anthony has gone through and what Kate essentially has gone through at the same time, but how Anthony is relating to his father and the whole thing, hey, Maron, forget about it.
It's just beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Well, of course, this is the finale episode. And so, I can say to subscribe to the podcast, but that won't really do you any good for a little while, right?
No, not for a little while. But
what we can do is recommend that you do head on over to our social media channels, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, search Mary and Blake. Head on over to our Facebook group. Just search Mary and Blake there, as we are having a lot of projects still going. We are podcasting. So if we have been keeping you company, think about checking out some of the other podcasts we do. And if you've enjoyed what we've done, you can let us know that by heading to jointhenerdclan.com. Right, Blake?
Yeah, go to jointhenerdclan.com. If I could speak. It's not like I'm a professional podcaster or anything. Jeez. Go there and check out all the great stuff that we have going on, including all of our knee-jerk reactions that we do to other television shows that we're watching or movies that we're watching. As a matter of fact, we also have Blake's book club. So if you're an Outlander fan and you can't get enough of Outlander, Hold on. Hey, there it is.
Got
to get my sounder in there.
That's what she said.
Nope, not that one, though. Sorry, Michael. Don't come back out here. If you are a fan of Outlander, we're doing a book club. I am doing a book club for Bridgerton. Freaking Outlander. You know what? This is what the finale did to me. It just turned my brain into freaking mush.
Yes.
That's what it did. Doing a book club for Voyager, the third book in the Outlander series. You don't want to miss out on it. It's a great place to just nerd out about Outlander and all the other things that are going on there. And of course, Mary, we do have to recommend House of the Dragon, our new podcast for the same titled show, House of the Dragon, which is essentially the prequel to Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. Great show, fun podcast. If you miss Game of Thrones, you miss being in Westeros, don't miss out on that as well. And yeah, that's in The Last Kingdom with Mary and Blake, and also our eventual return to the Potterverse, which is all things Harry Potter. Right now, we are in the middle of The Goblet of Fire, a chapter-by-chapter breakdown. So there are things cooking here in Mary and Blake Media.
We're busy bees.
Man, the train has left the station, and we just keep chugging.
That's
so
right.
If you want more Mary and Blake in your life, you can have it. Just go to maryandblake.com to check out all the stuff there, or follow us on the socials, whether it is Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, for all of the updates on all things Mary and
Blake. Now, if you have been with us, and you haven't yet taken the time to write a review in Apple Podcasts, we would love it if you did. Podfan in Colorado says, love this podcast. I absolutely love Mary and Blake's podcasts.
Thank you.
Even though I couldn't wait for them to watch Bridgerton, I'm really enjoying hearing their commentary and thoughts now. I always think something about in a different way after listening to an episode. And I love the relationship that Mary and Blake have.
Thank you. That's the idea. I mean, obviously our relationship that we have. Yeah, that's the idea too. But no, the idea is that what we do, it's not just a recap and whatever and like, yay, we give our thoughts. But what we're doing here at Mary and Blake Media, one of our modus operandi, if you will, is to give you a value that is different perspective. What are you learning about things and how you watch television or how you read a book or how you watch a movie? How does that change? How can we help you change your perspective so you're not just watching something for the sake of doing it, but you're engaging with it? Mm. And at the same time, you know, engaging in a community where there are a bunch of other people in nerds who get to do the same thing.
Yep.
That is the difference, I think, that we bring here at Mary and Blake Media, which is not just, oh, this is a recap and a review.
It's community.
It's community and also a learning experience for you, the listener, but also for Mary and I and how we engage with shows. I mean, you hear Mary say all the time, Blake, you catch on stupid stuff that...
Not stupid. You just catch on things that I don't.
Yeah, and Mary does the same thing, too. Like, she catches on things, and she looks at stuff in a different way. And I'm so happy that we have each other to do that, and we're here to provide that kind of value for you, the listener. And there's one other thing, too, Mary, that I want to say before we get into this episode, which is, to the listener, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you for listening to this podcast, especially when it has come out months after the actual season came out. As you know, Mary and I went through a lot of stuff at the beginning of this year. We continue to go through a lot of stuff, whether it is my mental health or it is Mary's actual physical health. You know, we're fighting battles every single day. And, you know, on top of that, we're trying to be good parents. We're trying to be good spouses. And we're trying to provide... In light of what I just said about value, we're trying to provide good quality content for you, the listener, so that when you come here and you do listen, you're like, wow, I actually got something out of that. Mm. And not just, yay, that was a review. That was a recap. Like, we don't want that. And if we have to take extra time to do that and we have to spread things out, then honest to God, that's what we're going to do. And that may upset some people, but, you know, honestly, go pound sand, because I'd rather make good content that's worthy of your time, the listener, than just getting it out there and having it suck. You know?
Yeah.
So thank you for your patience. Thank you for listening. And thank you for inviting us into your ear, even though it is late in the game. And season 3 is already filming. I know it's been hard for Mary. It's been hard for myself. And I'm sure it's been a pain in the ass for you, the listener. But it's important that you know how much we appreciate you and how you invite us into your most personal space, pretty much in your body. And
yeah,
again, that's your
ears.
So thank you very much. All right. That's that. Enough of the gushy stuff. I want to get to some more gushy stuff for the show. So you got anything else, Mary, before we get into the episode?
No, that's it.
All right, let's do it. right, so this was the finale, Mary. Season 2, Episode 8, finale, The Viscount Who Loved Me. And this reminds me of the James Bond film, The Spy Who Loved Me. Mm-hmm. And the director was the same director as the penultimate episode, Cheryl Dunier, or Dunn. I still have yet to find the correct pronunciation, Cheryl, I'm sorry. As I mentioned, she has directed many episodes of television, but the last one that she directed for Bridgerton was Harmony, the penultimate episode. And the writer, get to know this name, ladies and gents.
Okay.
Get to know this name because it's going to be an important one for season 3 and beyond. Jess Brownell served as the executive story editor for seasons 1 and 2 mm-hmm. of Bridgerton. She also wrote the episode Victory for this season. And you got to get to know that name because she is going to be the new showrunner for Bridgerton from season 3 and beyond. That's a really big deal. And if you want to know what an executive story editor is, go back to the episode for Victory. We did a whole breakdown of what an executive story editor does and what they do and the role in the writing room. But a showrunner, for the sake of posterity here, the showrunner is the person that's in charge. They are in charge of the whole thing. They're in charge of the writing. They're in charge of the budgeting. They're in charge of making the show operate. In getting the, you know, getting the casting done, they're the president of the show. Mm-hmm. And of course they have other people underneath them, you know, doing the tasks and everything. They have writers rooms and staff writers and everything, but this is the person that is ultimately responsible for what is being put out there. Chris Van Dusen has moved on from the project, and not in a bad way, not in a way that is like, oh, you know, I hate this show, whatever. It's just, he's moving on to different stuff mm-hmm. and he's moving on to do some more stuff with Shondaland Media and, you know, other projects that he's got going on as well. So Jess Brownell, big deal.
Awesome.
Big deal here for what's going on for her and what will be coming in season 3. So that is your writer and we also went over the director. So that is that. Mary, your cups of tea rating. How many cups of tea are you giving?
Oh my gosh. Finale? If you've been listening to this podcast, you're going to be shocked. This is another 5.
Mary, I'm going to co-sign with you on this one.
Wow.
I'm going to co-sign. I'm buying what you're selling, and that is a 5. I'm not going 5+ because it's not there for me.
Okay.
But I feel like this episode did a lot of great things and wrapped up in a great way what this season was about and also providing just enough lead for us to get into season 3 and what that means, but in a satisfying way, not in a, you know, the horse rears and Kate falls off the back kind of cliffhangery way, but in a sense that like, okay, I'm looking forward to seeing what goes on. Mm. So I'm into that. Mary, you're good, you're bad, and you're great. Dear GBG, what do you got?
My good is Lady Featherington getting the ball of her dreams. Oh. I love seeing how gaudy and extra the Featherington ball is.
All the gold.
The Featherington ball. Oh, yeah. All the gold. Show everything, you know, beautifully. I love even, like, that fireworks are happening. The Queen just had fireworks, last week?
I know.
And this is just... But how she crushes Cousin Jack.
Oh.
And just says, I'm keeping all the money.
Bodies
I've already
them.
Had my ladies pack your stuff. My team is my 3 girls who need me, and they're mine. And goodbye.
Forge some documents. Yep. You're on your way.
And as soon as one of my kids has a son, he's the new Lord Featherington.
And by the way, you're going to leave here not any worse off than when you came here.
Poor, and everybody's going to know, and they're just going to continue to think what Colin said, that you swindled these poor women.
Yeah, and these guys just... The guy just leaves speechless. Like he doesn't even know what to say. See you later. Okay,
yep. So I'm well done, Lady Featherington.
Woo, man.
You know, I it's something that I wouldn't have done. You know, very Slytherin. But I have been really proud of her this latter part of the season, where she's just trying to figure out how to keep her family afloat, how to keep her girls afloat, always thinking about her girls. In the best way, that's questionable. Does she show any kind of love towards Penelope? That's questionable. But... she's my good. My bad was Lady Whistledown coming back in the end.
Really?
Hearing Julie Andrews' voice when Penelope is screaming at Eloise, I stopped writing for you. I stopped. Yeah, for what? One day? Two
days? Well, no, it was more like a week.
It broke my last pen. My last feather quill.
I can't go get another quill.
You know, like, who are you? Who are you? I'm glad Colin dissed you right now. I'm mad at Penelope.
We're going to have a conversation about this.
That's fine. That's my bad. I'm disappointed in Pen.
Okay.
And then my great is Anthony crying when he finds out that Sharma Sharma woke up.
Oh, my God. That broke my heart. Broke my heart. But, like, in a good way. Like,
yeah.
Like, it was another area where I started to cry myself. Mm-hmm. Because I got all the freaking feels in this episode.
Oh, you do, Blake.
So many freaking feels.
Mm-hmm.
All right, my good. You know, I like Jess Brownell's writing. And maybe it is more indicative of the delivery from the actors themselves, particularly because they're finally able to live the life that they want.
Mm.
And they're finally finding their happiness and thereby can be themselves. But the writing here from Jess Brownell is so human, and it is so effective in the way she's trying to communicate the humanity of these characters, whether it is the Anthony and Gregory scene, or it is the scene where Anthony is telling Sharma Sharma how much he loves her and he touches his chest.
Oh.
But there's also this great moment too, and I think it's kind of underplayed, or at least it's kind of looked over, but it's when Anthony is asking Sharma Sharma how she's feeling, and he's like, how many fingers am I holding up? And
oh my gosh, that was so cute.
And he switches it to four, mm-hmm. you know, just to mess with her and the whole thing. It's those little things. And again, this is a reference to his father, who, as he noted to Gregory, had a penchant for pranks.
Yes.
And finally, Anthony is able to kind of live that out mm-hmm. a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it's in this subtle, small, little effectual way that he does it, which is the 3-4 and the prank and the laugh. And it ties everything in so well, but in a manner that is derivative of their character mm-hmm. themselves, not of the plot or what Lady Whistledown is doing or whatever. This is like driven specifically by those characters. And I like that a lot. Yeah. So I'm in on Jess Brownell's writing.
Mm.
I have a bad for, and like, I have a tie for the bad.
Okay.
And Anthony's first proposal.
Oh,
almost as bad as my proposal.
Almost as bad. Yours still beats this.
My proposal was not a great one. However, man, is his close. That first one is, and as soon as he started opening his mouth, I was like, dude, stop talking.
Yep.
I've been there, done that. Stop talking. And I knew that she was going to say no, and I knew mm-hmm. the whole thing. And then also, and that's just more of an observation. It's not anything bad necessarily about the show. It's just like, come on, dude, you got to be better than that.
Yeah.
But the true bad that I have here is that the fact that Eloise finds out about Penelope in the way that she does, how quickly she does, it feels a little convenient.
I mean, I agree, but on the flip side, you know, she, ever since the Queen came up, she has truly been poring over every single person in her mind. You know, and she's really been trying to figure out who it could be, who would work with the modiste, you know, putting this all together. And we have to give Penelope credit. She's been doing this for over a year and a half. So
you mean Eloise?
Eloise. We have to give Eloise credit that she's been doing this for over a year and a half. So her, you know, possible list of suspects is super small, if not nothing. And then to have this one person who she's never considered, and for her to run through her mind the possibilities of it.
Yeah, you could see the dots connecting.
Yeah.
And there is that moment where, you know, Penn says what she says, and mm-hmm. you can see that moment of recognition from Eloise. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't this, you know, overly huge thing.
But she says it all, you know, like, you knew about me and going to the print shop, and you knew about these things, and nobody else really did.
The one thing I will say is this. I like the fact that when they allude to the fact that Eloise is catching on,
yeah,
And later on in the conversation, when there is the final confrontation, Eloise says to Penelope, I never heard you talk like that.
Yes.
And maybe you have talked like that, but I've never listened.
I've never heard it. It sounded written.
Yeah, it sounded written. And I've never noticed it before until now. That is something that I can buy. Yes. I can absolutely buy that. Because you're right, Mary. When your antenna are up, finally, and after all this stuff, and it's a mistake that Penelope makes by doing what, by saying what she says, that leads to Eloise's, you know, moment of clarity.
Because, I mean, think about it. We've never heard Penelope gossip. Aside from, oh, someone might be, have a baby. Like, she doesn't gossip to Eloise. They talk about other things, but they're not in that nature paying attention to other people.
Yeah, that's fair.
And so I get it. You know, think about if you were with a friend who doesn't gossip and then all of a sudden they're like detailed. These people were hooking up in a closet. This person's shoving tissue down her bubbies. Like, you'd be like, when did you start gossiping?
Right, yeah.
This is so not in your character. Hold the front door.
Yeah, so I still think it's a little convenient, and I still think that it's a little pushed on us by the end of the episode so that there is this transition for Eloise and Penelope moving into next season. So that's why that's my bad. But my great, oddly enough, my great is the conversation between Gregory and Anthony, because for the first time, we're actually seeing Anthony act like a father. We're acting, we're seeing him act like he's finally doing something other than brooding and worrying about the day to day.
Yeah.
He's actually the lord of the house.
Yes.
He's actually the Viscount, as well as the older brother, as well as the father figure. And it's through the lens of adoration for his father that he's actually able to do that. And not only that, but we actually get a little scene that actually matters with Gregory as a kid.
Yes.
Like, finally. Mm-hmm. Like, say what you will about, you know, the B team Bridgertons. I mean, this is like the F team.
Yeah.
Like,
JV.
Gregory, like, I even forgot the kid's name.
You're the water boy.
Yeah, you're not even the water boy. You're like,
you're a fan.
You're the guy who does the underwear. Like, that's what you are. Ew. Like, you're the guy who washes the jock straps.
Ew, they should wash their own. They're grown people.
So, and say what you will, like I said about the B team Bridgertons, but like Hyacinth and Gregory, they're freaking nobodies. As a matter of fact, Hyacinth just got recast.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they need to like age her up probably.
So it's just, you know, nobody's going to know. Like, nobody is going to know unless you hear this podcast that Hyacinth was recast. Like, you're going to watch it next season and be like, yeah, that's Hyacinth. Like,
Oh, yeah. She's got the same curls.
Yeah, like.
She's still bad at piano.
And that, when that happens, you know that's a poorly written character. Now, granted, of course.
There's too many of them.
You can't get into it all at once quite yet. But still.
Doesn't the F1 come back?
Sure.
What is her name?
Don't even know.
Goodbye. Your name's an F. You're the fail.
So either way, I like the fact that we have this scene between Gregory and Anthony because it is just such a transformative moment for Anthony and what he means to his brother, what he means to his family, especially after all of the stuff that goes on, how miserable he is after, you know, Sharma ditches him. And it's just a really nice scene, and a scene in which I cried. Again, all the feels, baby.
Francesca,
there you go. All right, so the music that was used for this episode. Are you ready for this one, Mary?
Yes.
All right, here we go. Well, Marvin, this is Wrecking Ball by Miley Cyrus. And would you say, Mary, and the final time we have this conversation, this is for the Xennial to older millennial, even Gen X person?
Yes.
I think so, too. I would say that this is on the tail end.
Tail end of millennial.
Tail end.
Yes. Not even, but okay.
What do you mean not even?
I mean, I have partied to party in the USA.
Okay.
And I am not ashamed to say it. And yeah, I'm here for the Miley. Because remember, Blake, we are the Zennials. We're the elder millennials.
Yes.
So Miley Cyrus is a millennial too.
Yeah.
Okay? She's here for it.
Fine, fair enough. You know what? I think this might be my favorite cover of this season.
Awesome.
I think so. Where would you stand in the...
I don't even know. I need to go through them all.
No, like, and... I mean, we have no, How I Deep Is Your Love, What About Us by Pink, Sign of the Times by Harry Styles, the Kabi Kushi Kabi Gum. Mm-hmm. We have the You Ought to Know was a really good one, too.
I did love that one.
I really liked that one. Dancing on My Own by Robin, Diamonds by Rihanna, Stay Away by Nirvana was a really good one, too. And then Material Girl by Madonna.
I liked Material Girl and Wrecking Ball.
I think I'm going to... It probably speaks more to my tastes, but Wrecking Ball, You Ought to Know, and Stay Away by Nirvana. Mm-hmm. I think those are the highlights of this season. But even then, I still think I'm going to go with this song. I still think Wrecking Ball is a culmination of all of this. And I really liked Wrecking Ball because I had the lyrics here, and I closed it out by accident. I just like this. I came in like a wrecking ball. I never hit so hard in love. All I wanted was you to... all I wanted was to break your walls. All you ever did was wreck me. Yeah, you wreck me. I put you high in the sky, and now you're not coming down. It slowly turned. You let me burn, and now we're on ashes on the ground. Don't you ever say I just walked away. I will always want you. I can't live a lie. Running for my life, I will always want you. Like... Mm. Just great lyrics and a wonderful arrangement here by the Midnight String Quartet.
Yes.
And how it plays out during the dance scene at the Featherington Ball between Sharma Sharma and Anthony. And by God, oh, holy Lord. Holy Lord. That dance scene.
Oh, you stole my heart.
All right, Mary. All right, so that's where I want to stop.
Okay.
Okay.
Do you want my You don't need my little recap at any point, by the way?
Oh. Yeah, you know what?
I don't think you do.
I don't think I do.
It's the finale.
You know what? Screw, we're breaking all the rules.
We already talked our GBGs.
Yeah, we did it all.
There you go.
Forgot about the finale, I'm sorry. You know what? That's an affectation of the fact that I didn't put it in the show notes.
I know.
You know, you've been telling me this whole time to do it, and I still haven't done it.
I know.
And I screwed it up.
It's okay.
I'm going to let the song ride, by the way.
Okay.
Because I like it that much.
Nice. I appreciate that. Okay, let's just get in some little fun things. Okay. Just to get him out of the way.
All right, what do you got?
The queen saying, oh, do you know that I have a single nephew?
Oh, yes.
Prince Frederick might be coming back.
Oh, of course he's coming back.
I am so here for it. So here for that.
That dweeb.
Oh, no, I love him. I am so here for it.
Do you think Prince Frederick and Edwina...
I think they'd be a great couple.
Do you think they make an appearance in season 3?
Yes.
I think they kind of have to.
They have to.
Especially if Shama comes back.
Yes, please.
Yep.
Thank you so much. I'm here for it. I love it so incredibly much.
That's an upgrade,
and that's,
by the
of course, also around the same time. The queen says this in front of Cressida when Cressida and her mom, Lady Cowper, are like making fun of... Sharma Sharma and Anthony dancing because they're dancing all by themselves. And the queen is, she is now shipping this couple hard.
Oh, they look great, don't they?
Yes. Then why is nobody else dancing?
Don't they look great?
And I just love that it's like such a burn because she knows that Cressida wanted to marry the prince. Just such a great moment. And so now, too, you know that the burn that the queen had because of the flopped wedding.
Yeah.
She's now let go of.
Yeah, she's and here she's for like, the love. Oh, no, honey. Yes. That wedding didn't happen because
I didn't want it to.
I chose differently. Like, yes. What a way to salvage that moment. Oh, yes. Girl. That's why that lady, she the queen.
Yes.
She the queen.
Oh, she is. Why does she always have to snuff so much?
What is she? Is it tobacco?
I thought it was Coke.
Is it heroin? Yeah, I don't think it's heroin, but I don't know.
Coke.
You know what? I'm Googling right now.
But like, why does it have to be so present? because I actually think that it deters from her character unless she's going to go nutty or OD or have something. Like, I don't think she needs it. I don't think we need to know that she's high a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. Yes, we know that she's dealing with the grief of her husband being ill. We appreciate that. We've seen her sadness. And I'm hoping because we've been able to see a different side of her at the end of the season, that next year we don't have to snuff so much.
All right. So there's actually been a whole interview about this. Oh. And that there, many viewers are assuming that it's cocaine.
That's what I just
said. I know. Trap. However, the lady who plays the queen is saying, no, it is not cocaine. As a matter of fact,
it's brown sugar.
She reassures her fans that her character is simply a big fan of tobacco. That's right. It is not cocaine.
You can sniff tobacco?
It is. Yeah, because it's a leaf. You know, all you do is just cut it up
and
sniff it up.
That's just gross.
She explains that the queen is using snuff, and it's an early form of tobacco ingested through the nose. And the real Queen Charlotte's snuff habit earned her the nickname Snuffy Charlotte.
Okay.
Okay, so there you go.
I mean, but I don't really need it that much more. I hope in season 3 she does it once or twice, and that's it.
According to historian Dr. Will Tullett, snuff was a popular way to use tobacco in Regency England because it was considered improper to smoke pipes or cigars in public. In fact, pipe smokers were relegated to the status of persona non grata, mm-hmm. Tullett wrote, in The Smell in the 18th Century England, a Social Sense. Mm-hmm. There you go.
Fine, but I get it. Like, to me, it's now going to be overdone if we continue to have this much snuffleupagus going on.
I will say, without context, I can see how some viewers are looking at it like, whoa.
Well, especially since most of us viewers are thinking it's like hardcore drug.
Yes, right.
You know, so I do. I hope that they kind of pull it back a little bit.
Yep, fair enough. Just rein that, you know,
rein it in a little bit. We get it.
Little less slack in the rope, if you will.
Right, so I wanted to get that off my plate. I also need to throw in the Colin situation.
Yeah.
Oh, you're special to me. You're special to me too. I'm going to like save the Featheringtons and bust up this ruby. Like, he's
all very valiant.
Secret agent Colin. Love it. And then he pulls an Anthony when he's with his guy friends.
Yes.
Oh, I don't like Penelope. Why would you put her down? Like, okay, if you don't want people to know you have a crush or anything, fine. But like, why would you actively speak poorly about her? Maybe you can say, listen, I'm not in the market right now. She's my friend. Why couldn't he have at least said it a little nicer instead of being a jerk?
That's an absolutely fair point, Mary.
Like, it made me think less of him. Not that I don't think people would do that. I mean, we saw Anthony do it earlier this season, but Anthony had a different perspective. But like, you don't just say like, I'm not in the market right now.
Well, I think it's supposed to be an artistic choice where it's like, as you kind of mentioned already, it's supposed to be reflective of how Anthony spoke concerning Edwina and how, you know, he's not marrying for love and all that other crap.
I'm just
is
glad.
Is it just guys being dudes? I would say so.
But it's stupid. I'm glad it happened because I'm mad at Penelope. Good. Hear that.
Yeah. That's I'm not going to say a hot take, but that's a pretty good take right there.
Yeah. Like, so, let's pour more salt in that wound.
All right, you know what? We have a lot to talk about.
And you have
about
a messy room.
Yeah.
Good luck cleaning that up.
We have a lot to talk about, I think, for Sharma Sharma and Anthony.
Oh, P.S.
What?
Anthony, the actor, Jonathan Bailey.
Yes.
He is the voice actor for a sleep story on the Calm app.
Is he really?
Yes!
Oh, my goodness.
So if you... A winner! Guided meditations. Do know that this could happen in your ears. Come on, Jonathan. Oh, there he is.
All in search of a rare and beautiful flower for his beloved. Over the years he was at sea, the captain penned a series of letters to his love back home in England.
Yep.
Oh,
I know what I'm listening to tonight.
Oh my goodness. Maybe you'll have some dreams like Sharma Sharma did.
Hey.
No, hey girl. Hey. You keep listening to Jonathan Bailey.
Oh, I will.
Hopefully we'll get some benefits out of this.
So I just needed to throw that in, these little extra things that I need to make sure happen.
So we got, like, as I was saying, I think we have a lot to talk about with Sharma Sharma
so
and
much.
Anthony here. But I do want to get into this Penelope thing, because I think this is kind of a hot take from you that you were happy that she kind of got it in the head here a little bit. And I want to know more specifically about the transition that goes from Penelope's voice to Julie Andrews' voice and what that means for you. And did you like that artistic moment?
Well, to me, I took it as she was writing, but it hasn't been published yet. It hasn't been in the hands because I didn't see the papes. I didn't see the newsies handing it out. I didn't see people reading it, that maybe Penelope is fire inside of her because she's not pissed. You know, she's like a villain now, in my opinion.
I think she has made a turn in that direction.
Oh, yeah. So it's like brewing. I took it as brewing the first couple of times I watched it. But then the last time I watched it, I asked Blake, I said, did you interpret it that she actually wrote? Again, after she tells Eloise, I ended it for you. I'm done with that. I'm so sorry. And he said, yes, Mary, I interpret that Lady Whistledown's peeps are back.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, when we're watching the writing action from Penelope, it's important to note that when Julie Andrews starts speaking, that is when Penelope is actually writing the words down on paper with the quill.
Reader.
Those are the actual words. The words that Penelope says are not written. And that to me is a sense of Penelope coming to grips with herself, the choices that she has made, what that means to her relationship with Eloise and her relationship with herself. Mm-hmm. But then she has this turning moment when everything switches. And it's at that point she decides, oh, no, 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 no. You just called me an insipid wallflower. And you pity me. And I'm done pitying myself now. Colin just, you know, sent me to freaking mm-hmm. Maz mm-hmm. For no reason. Mm-hmm. And now, yeah, no, we're not doing this. As a matter of fact, I'm going back. And this is when Julie Andrews starts writing again. And starts reading again. And I thought, wow, what an interesting choice. Maybe Whistledown's going to continue, or maybe Whistledown has stopped. But they're not using Julie Andrews' voice anymore. It's actually Nicola Coughlin's voice. Like, this is like cool stuff. And then they switch back, and I said, I like that better. Mm. I like it better. I like that Julie Andrews is back. I like that Whistledown is back. And it's going to be guns a-blazing for Whistledown for the next season or so. With that in mind, how did you like the final confrontation between Eloise and Penelope?
I loved it because, you know, Eloise has continually in this season told Penelope, we don't keep secrets from each other. I'm telling you this because I'm your friend. And let's be real, Penelope did hide from her for a little bit what she was doing, but then she did come clean and let mm-hmm. her know. And she has just been so forthcoming with her search for Lady Whistledown for this past year and a half. And to go through the queen and the fear of what it's going to happen to her if the queen did continue. Like, Eloise just went through so much. Mm-hmm. And Penelope let it happen and didn't come clean. She could have come clean and told her it is me.
But this is what I'm going to do.
But this is what I'm going to do about it or whatever. And then Eloise could have at least said, okay, you can write this bad thing about me. You know, like they could have done something together.
Yes.
And come clean and said, I'm really sorry I've kept this from you. I'm sorry I wrote that other thing.
It's an interesting position that I think Penelope finds herself in, because she doesn't want to sacrifice the secret, mm-hmm. right? Because there has been this whole thing of the secret and what that means to her and how that will affect her relationship with Eloise. Mm-hmm. So she can't let that loose, because she thinks that if she does, she's going to lose Eloise. But she also knows that she's got to get Eloise off the hook. So she does what she does. And it's the worst of both worlds.
Yes.
Because Eloise finds out anyway. Mm-hmm. And now that things are really bad. Because not only did you put Eloise in danger of losing. I mean, they really, she actually did endanger Eloise's status because nobody showed up to the Bridgerton ball, right? But on top of that, because of this reaction, Eloise turns around and says to Theo Sharp, okay, we can't be together. Mm-hmm. Like, I've had my fun. This is that.
Yeah,
like,
she's convinced herself,
like, we're moving on. Mm-hmm. And I think that's worse in her mind.
Yes.
As a result of what?
Well, Eloise, this is Eloise's first crush. This first, and he liked her back.
Yeah.
It's not even just this insipid, like, oh, yeah, I have this crush on this person, but I never talked to them. You know, the cute little wallflower crush. Like, this is someone who she had a relationship with, who was on her level, who she has very few of those friends. Mm-hmm. She gets made fun of by her family for reading and having different thoughts. You know, she can kind of sometimes share it with Penelope, but Penelope often puts her down for these kind of thoughts. And she finally found a like-minded individual who she also had the hots for. And he liked her too.
Yeah. And do you, because of all this, do you find that Eloise's comments to Penelope are warranted? You are an insipid wallflower.
Yeah.
Them some fighting words, man.
I mean, I would have said it too.
You absolutely would have. And I think the underlying issue is...
Basically, I'm a Bridgerton, friends, if you haven't told. I'm not a Featherington. I'm a Bridgerton.
The underlying issue here too, Mary, is there, I think, is always a level of truth to when you lash out like that. There's always some level of thinking that is in line with the lashing, right?
And that's the problem that I get into, is people say, Mary, you're too mean. And I say, but what did I say that wasn't true?
Right.
And they say, but that doesn't mean it's right. This is what Blake and I have to have this conversation on a frequent basis. Mary, just because it's honest and right doesn't mean you should say it. And I say, okay, then what's the other option?
The other option is to not say it and find the comfort within yourself, knowing that what you say to somebody that you love is going to hurt them.
Well, you know what? She was hurt. Eloise is hurt, and she's allowed to speak her truth.
And that is what I'm saying, because as hard as it was for Penelope to hear...
And when I'm hurt, I'm allowed to speak my truth,
too. There's a level here of truth that makes me think that Eloise really did consider Penelope an insipid wallflower. Is it as heightened as when she did the lashing out? Probably not. But is it lurking in the background like you're just nothing, you're a nobody, and you deserve this? Like, is that there? My contention is probably yes. It probably is there, just a little bit.
Listen, being a wallflower is a fact.
Yes.
Okay? Is Blake the most kind person to most people? No. He's not. I know that you all are like, oh, Blake's so kind. He's probably not, okay? If we didn't know you through the podcast, he wouldn't be that nice to you if he just met you on the street.
I would not.
Okay? If you came up trying to sell Girl Scout cookies, he'd say, go get your shine box. This is overpriced. How do I know you're really a Girl Scout?
That, however, does not mean if you came up to me and said, hey, I'm a listener to the podcast. I really like
Blake is
I would
very
be
nice
very
to real
warm
listeners.
And, and kind. And yes, please. If you are a listener and you happen to see me,
so what I'm
please come say hi.
Is if I were to ever say, Blake, you have a tendency to be cold and cruel, and some people have called you an asshole, and I can appreciate that.
And I'd be like, yeah, and?
Okay. So for her to say, you're a wallflower, truth.
So, yeah, truth.
Can tell which one of us grew in a Irish Catholic household where they never expressed their feelings versus the household from hippies.
So much Irish Catholic guilt. So much.
Blake
Irish
is learning how to express himself still.
We're getting there.
And I'm learning how to... Wait.
We're getting there.
A little bit before I open my mouth.
You know what I like to call it? A process. It's just a process.
Always.
We're learning from the process, yes. Mary.
Yes.
Oh, man. All right. You got anything else you want to say about any of the other characters? There is a little bit of a smidgen here for Benedict in that Anthony paid for his way in to get into.
And it doesn't even mean that he couldn't have gotten in without it.
We
it's
like
just
to call
the
this
extra boost.
We like to call this the Aunt Becky.
Oh, yeah.
That is a reference for all of you for what the hell's the name of that show?
Full House.
How Aunt Becky paid for her kid to get into USC.
Yeah.
Yes.
Once again, he still could have gotten in.
I agree.
This is just a little added boost. I don't think that that was wrong of Anthony. He's got the money. He wants to make sure his brother's happy. He's investing in the school. Make sure they have the supplies that they need.
Maybe he gets a name on a room, like Danbury has a name on a room. You never know. Mm-hmm. You know, they have the right supplies.
And... probably was a great tax write-off. Right?
You know what? I'm not going to put it past him.
I know.
I'm not going to put it past him.
And yet Benedict's like, meh, you helped out. I'm sorry. Did you want to stay home?
So I guess I'm interpreting this as you don't understand Benedict's point of view.
I'm an eldest child by nature, so.
Fair enough.
If it gets Benedict out of my house, out of my hair, because all he's doing
dare
is sitting on
the
a
good
swing.
Name. Don't you dare sully the good
stuff,
name.
Stuff, like drinking too much tea, okay? Gets him out of, you know Benedict made a mess in one of those rooms with all of his paints.
Oh, yeah.
Go paint somewhere else.
Yeah, like. They had to lay down special
Anthony
stuff
thought,
for him.
This is an investment in my house. I already have the white paint on my floor from the Bridgerton ball. Now I have, at least I don't have to deal with Benedict's paint. That's where they got it.
By the way, loved the scene on the swings, which is a callback to season one when they were on the swings as well. Great stuff there. Mm-hmm. You know, again, I like how the show does this thing where it references its own visual language. It references its own iconography, especially for particular relationships, and not in doing so for the sake of doing it, but because it means something. There's a method of transference there for us as viewers that when we see the pinkies nearly touch, we understand what that means.
Yes.
When we see Benedict and Eloise once again back on the swings, we understand what that means, you know, and how they relate to each other. And that, you know, Daphne and Anthony have their relationship, and at the same time, Benedict and Eloise, as the second eldest, you know, brother and sister, have their own relationship. That is something I kind of look forward to seeing develop a little bit more.
Okay, yeah.
And especially in contrast to Daphne and Anthony.
You know, what was tough, though, is with all this Daphne presence, you're just like, where's Simon? It stood out to me.
Yes. I will say that Simon's absence stood out. And for those of you who have been keeping score, the guy who plays Simon, Reggae John Page, he is not coming back to the show.
At all?
At all. As of this moment.
He's not coming back for season three?
No, he's not coming back.
Oh, why?
In fact, because he and Shonda Rhimes made a deal before the first season where he's like, I'm going to do this and I want to do it, but I'm only going to do it for one season. Because I want to like tell the story, and that's my story.
What does he have better on his plate right
well,
now?
Well, he's a rising star, as a matter of fact. He's just starred in the movie The Gray Man on Netflix.
Yep, didn't watch it.
He is also starring in the new Dungeons & Dragons film that's coming out.
Okay.
That's a big deal.
That is a big deal.
He is the leading candidate for the new James Bond at the moment.
Okay.
So he is on the rise.
Because he's not like Matthew from Downton Abbey who thinks he's going to be a big deal. And really, you're not. You're just a CGI-ed beast in Beauty and the Beast.
Correct. Although I will say this. Matthew is in a great, and I mean great film called The Guest.
But could he have still done Downton Abbey? Probably.
Should have done Downton Abbey. But then again, it also comes from a different culture, right? Downton Abbey was a British piece, like a British filmed piece, right? Mm-hmm. So this is an American piece. Mm-hmm. In American television, people are locked up for, you know, years in a contract. Whereas in Britain, people come and go every two, three seasons. At the most, two or three seasons. So I think there is a little bit of a cultural difference in how television is shot between the two. But you're right, Mary. There is, I think, an apropos comparison. The rumor on the street right now, and the thing that Reggae John Page has come out and said is like, listen, I'm not coming back. So if you want Simon to reappear, you're going to have to recast. So they might have to recast that character.
Okay.
Would you be okay with that?
Yep.
I think so too. Because
you know what they're going to do?
What?
They're going to say, okay, we're going to find an even hotter Simon.
Oh, I don't know.
They can.
He was pretty hot.
Yep, but I bet you there's an even hotter one.
So I'm not saying that
his audition will be licking spoons.
I'm not saying that Simon's absence affected the story. Mm-hmm. I don't think that it did. I think it told. I think it told a good enough story unto itself where Simon's presence was not needed.
Agreed.
But it is certainly noticeable because there's always an excuse for why he's not there.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that hurt this season at
No, it's just annoying because you invested so much in Simon last season that it is annoying. And Lady Danbury never talks about Simon. Like, it's just annoying. You wasted my time.
Well, I mean, well, again, there is something to be said here about like the anthology feel to this show, right? And I think this kind of leads back to the conversation that we were having last episode, and I kind of want to have this conversation now, which is this season was not as visually delectable, I think I said last episode, as the first season. It wasn't as visually stunning. But I'm not sure if it was meant to be as visually artistic as the first season. Because this felt more character-driven. It felt more gritty. It felt more rooted in complex emotions than the, all out lust and all out burning between Simon and Daphne and the artistry involved in telling that story. Would you agree with that sentiment?
Yes, I am happy with how this went. Did I have enough grandiose, colorful shots for my phone background from this season? No. But I think it was much more in tune with Anthony. Anthony is very much behind the scenes. He does not want to necessarily be the center of the tension. He did not want to have this role of being the Viscount. Daphne loved being the diamond. She loved getting all dolled up and hosting balls and all this kind of stuff. And so I think the feminine nature of Daphne lended to last season being opulent and colorful and visual and it being new because everything was new for her. Whereas the Viscount is in charge of his family unit. And so I liked that we spent so much time in people's homes and in people's bedrooms and in people's intimate conversations.
Sure. And I think there's obviously some visual cues that translate in, from the first season into the second season. Mm-hmm. Of course, that being the bee, that being the Bridgerton home, all of the flowers and and it is still colorful in nature.
Mm-hmm.
The costumes are still opulent. The queen still has, her amazing wigs. There are things that translate, but the visual palette, the palette I think is relatively the same, but the language in which that palette is communicated, I think is different for this season. And I wonder if that visual language will be altered for each subsequent season so that it most benefits the character in which over or on which the season is based.
I would assume so.
Yeah. And that's why I think this show has a benefit of it being anthology based, moving from one character to the next, to the next.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that we spent a lot of time with a lot of people. I would have liked to have spent more time with Kate. I would have liked to have spent more time with Edwina. Agreed. I would have liked to have spent more time dealing with Anthony's own issues instead of the search for Whistledown and all that other stuff. But in the end, Mary, a lot of these things are tied up in a way that I think is satisfying, but not in such a tight little bow that all's well.
Mm-hmm.
Do you like the fact that we don't get a nice little neat bow?
Yes, I'm here for it.
What stands out to you that is not tied up, that is not a nice little neat bow?
Eloise and Colin, obviously anyone related to Whistledown is not neat bow. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I would also say I think Benedict here too is not tied up nice and neat. Like, there's some stuff that's going to be lingering here.
I mean, he bores me, but yes.
Don't you dare.
I already have, and will continue to, just because it irks you.
Sneaky, best character.
Yeah, but like, whatever. Oh, no, my brother paid for me to go to school. Okay, so are you going to apply again next year and see if you can get out on your own merit? Or are you going to find a new hobby?
Get over yourself. Get a new hobby.
Go. Seriously.
Go do some archery, will you?
Like, I'm just over it. Get into baking. Do something useful with your life.
Do some sourdough. Just like just like the rest of us, okay?
Yes.
It's the grossest thing ever, sourdough.
No, it's not. You eat my sourdough.
No, I know.
Oh, my God. I can't with you.
That's what she said.
I can't with
you. But just like the process of how it's made, and it just sits there and it's warm and it like just bubbles and it's gross.
Okay, well, most of the things you eat are gross, Blake. Hate to break it to you. I think it's incredible science.
It's such a dork. Just nerd! Oh, all right. You want to move on to Sharma Sharma and Anthony, or do you have anybody else that you'd like to talk about?
No.
Because we are 56 minutes into this episode. Yep. I just recognized that. We've been talking for quite a bit.
Yeah.
So let's get into the Sharma Sharma and Anthony of it all and how it gets resolved. Mary, your favorite part of the Anthony and Sharma Sharma interactions and what goes down between the two, what is that? And the follow-up question is, are you okay with a wedding happening off-screen?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I am okay with it being off screen. I loved the fireworks because I am here for the backgrounds, of course, for my iPhone. But I love that he finally says, I love you, and she says, I love you back. I've been waiting for that moment for quite some time.
Yep.
So that was one of my favorites. I did also love their dancing and him just telling her, you know, just ignore everybody else. We're totally fine. Or did she say that? I don't even care because both of them could have said it.
No, he said
such strong individuals. Yeah, I'm just here for everything.
I think there was a missed opportunity here.
But
when he says ignore everybody else, mm-hmm. I would love to have seen only them in the room.
Black, like a blur out, like
yeah, just
the
them.
Wedding. Okay,
because that again, it would have mirrored the wedding.
Mm-hmm.
That it's only her that matters to him, yes. And the fact that he says that to her, he is the only thing that matters to her at that mm-hmm. point. Like, I think there's a missed opportunity.
Agreed.
There.
I would agree with that.
If it was just them dancing mm-hmm. with the band playing
yes.
and everybody else is outside of the room.
Oh, that would have been lovely.
That would have been quite nice. It would have carried through that. Again, that visual language mm-hmm. of what the show is trying to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would have been the payoff at that moment. We do somewhat get that moment, but just in reality as opposed to a virtual reality, or not a virtual reality, but just in an imagined reality. When they're together, you know, in the gardens and the fireworks go off. Mm-hmm. And I think you can make the argument that the dance is, you know, is their wedding dance, right? It's like, it's when they finally recognize that we need to be together because,
What?
Hey, Maro, when they got the hands.
Oh, yes.
And she lowers it down below her eyes yep. and all you see is... Oh, man. Oh.
Bam. Just like that. A winner.
No. You know what that was? Do you know what that was, Mary?
No. Yes.
Makes me want to shout.
Oh.
Whew. Here for it.
Oh, sent shivers up my spine. Just the whole, that whole thing, what that means for them and how they're finally seeing each other mm-hmm. for who they are, what they're doing, and that they both recognize that this is what they should be doing, it's only them that matters. They're finally uncovering the veil that have blocked them from having, you could just go on for hours about
this.
See you. Like, yeah, I see, going full Avatar.
Yep.
They went full Avatar.
Nom, 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 nom.
No, ladies and gentlemen, that was not Mary chewing. She was trying to be one of the Navi.
Speaking, yes. You're welcome, Blake.
Okay. I think you can make the argument that was their wedding dance. I think you'd also make the argument in the gardens that was them exchanging their vows, mm-hmm. and they do finally have that moment, which would be reflective of the moment of Anthony seeing her and only her in her veil, in the wedding dress, alone. And that is both of them alone yep. in the garden.
Yep.
I think the language is there, but feels muddied in comparison to what I propose, which is them being alone in the dance room.
I was fine either way. Yeah. I actually thought that it showed strength having them with other people onlooking.
Yeah.
And that we could just interpret it that way.
Sure. And there's also further evidence, I think, that proves this too, is when the fireworks go off. That is, you know, reflective of when the queen
had the
fireworks
go off. Oh, yeah. They're just like makeout session. Who cares if someone turns around?
Yeah. But no, like, remember in the wedding when the queen says, oh, we're going to have these fireworks go off as soon as they say I do?
Yes.
You know, the fireworks go off when Kate finally says yes.
Cute.
And I love you when the whole thing. So, yes. Yeah, like, I think there's some language there, though muddied, mm-hmm. but still present, that is there, you know, confirming that this mm-hmm. could be their wedding. So, like you, Mary, I think I'm okay with there not being a wedding. Like, yeah. I don't think I need it.
No.
I think there's some sentiment that's out there that why did we spend an hour on Edwina's wedding as opposed to Kate's wedding?
Because it was fun and there were peacocks.
But I think it's more necessary to spend that time with Edwina's wedding.
Yeah.
It's more necessary so that you get the weight of the choice that is made.
Whatevs, man. I'm here for it.
Because again, when you choose something that's wholly good, like the marriage that's going to happen between Kate and Anthony, like there's nothing, there's no drama there. There's nothing to, like, it's going to happen.
Yes.
So like, what are we doing? We're just doing it for the sake of doing it, just to catch up. I would rather it not happen and get to the rest. Hmm. And that's why it's so important to invest in that. And Mary, I think it's also important to invest in like the fact that Kate says no to Anthony at first. She denies him the marriage. I mean, obviously, yeah, for, you know, how he said it and, you know, like there's a duty and we took liberties and, mm-hmm. but it's important for her to say that, you know, it's important because a character, when they're trying to live out their anti-theme, like when she starts the season, you know, all she wants to do is be a governess and she's living for her sister's happiness.
Yeah.
And every character, when they're in the midst of change, right before the change, it's important to give them a choice to go back to the life that they were living before mm-hmm. all of this change started. You have to do it.
Yeah.
Because if you don't do that, there's no growth. That you have to give them an opportunity to say, like, remember,
I've changed.
In, or like a recognition of change. Remember Marlin in Finding Nemo? When mm-hmm. he finally gets Nemo back and he's like, can we just go back to the reef and enjoy the view? He has an opportunity to do so. Yet, he doesn't. And he allows Nemo to continue on and go through the rest of his journey.
Yes.
That's the same thing that's happening here. Kate, it's important that she chose to not go forward with it until she makes that choice.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Do you blame Kate for saying, hey, Anthony, take a hike?
No. I love it. I love that she gets to be playful and, I don't know, give him a little something.
Yep. I kind of was a little annoyed that she was upset that Anthony didn't show up. When she was asleep. Did you get that sense that she was upset that he didn't show?
I mean, it was a week and they had just had oral sex on a pavilion.
Yes.
So I don't know. The way that she reacted made me feel like this is the norm. That if someone cares about you, they come and visit you when you're knocked out.
Yep.
So I can appreciate her being upset.
I don't know. Dude, I rescued you. Like, I am the one who found you.
I rescued you and then I left you. And yeah, I haven't.
Well, the doctor told him to take a hike. So you can't blame him for that.
I know.
Like, I picked you up in the rain and I carried you. In one of the most romantical moments of the entire season.
But she wasn't awake for that. She doesn't know.
But she got people around. She's got people around her to tell her.
I know.
Oh, man. I feel like that's a little bit unwarranted there, kiddo. You should be happy because otherwise, who knows? You got bleeding from your head.
Oh, I know.
You got some issues with that guy. Unless that guy ain't there.
Oh, my God.
Speaking of that. Oh man, when he, this might have been just Jonathan Bailey, but his acting when his mother comes out and says she's awake, and like you could see, see him put his hands on his eyes.
That's why,
like,
it was like great.
Oh,
how convenient that someone drives by on a horse carriage as he's picking her up, miles away from their house.
Oh, good point. Yeah, yeah, little convenient, a little writerly. I'll give you
good.
That.
Good. Because I can't carry her this entire way. And putting her on my horse, jostling her, would probably wouldn't help
the brain injury. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, the funny thing is, I think, Mary, the only thing that could potentially give healing to the situation between Mary and Edwina and Kate is what happens. And that is a mortal...
Yeah.
Potentially mortal injury.
Put things into the big picture.
Yeah. That's the only way I can see these three healing in any capacity. Mm-hmm. And the fact that Edwina has enough moral compass and enough wisdom to say, we've spent so long trying to play these roles that we don't even know who we really are.
Yeah.
So can we just please finally be the sisters, you know, that we actually are?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a real moment of inflection and reflection.
Yeah.
You know, like...
And I'm proud of her, and that's why I'm okay that she had her little emo phase. You know, we're all allowed to have that.
Yes.
And then she had a little growth.
Well, I mean, there was, yeah, absolutely, there was some growth. And maybe inspired by the whole, you know, brain injury
type
deal thing. But it's worthy of... I think it's worthy of that relationship, and I think it's a natural thing for that to happen, you know, for those characters and for people in general. Like when somebody comes close to dying, it does put stuff into perspective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it does help, and it does you do figure this stuff out.
Yeah,
happens for me all the time. You know, I mean, not all the time, but like it happens.
No, it does happen all the time.
No, you get perspective.
Our running tally has been 8 days.
What do you mean?
8 days, 3 days.
What do you mean?
That you're crabby.
Uh-huh.
And then you come around in 3 days.
It's gotten far less than 3 days.
Two and a half?
No, I would say probably a day. Maybe. Maybe you're right. I don't know. How about we meet in the middle and say two?
Okay, sure, Blake. Sure.
So we have that, and I think as far as this season is concerned, you know, this has very much been about grief and what grief is and finding your purpose and finding your heart and, you know, sticking to decisions and admitting when you're wrong, but also embracing love and embracing pathways. And it's been very much about how, you know, fathers have... you know, influenced families in decisions that were made and deaths and all that stuff. But throughout this season too, I think we see a really big emphasis on mothers and what they do for their families. And, you know, in particular, you know, whether it is Lady Mary, you know, talking to Kate about how it wasn't her responsibility and she needs to find love, and or, you know, Portia Featherington, like, bodying Cousin Jack.
Yes.
You know, or in this case, which is also another one of my favorite moments from this episode, which is Violet talking to Anthony and saying it never should have happened. What happened for you is to you when your father died, and what happened with me, it's something that I think about every single day.
Every single night before I close my eyes and every morning when I wake up.
You know, and she says, I'm so sorry it was you who was with your father that day. Mm-hmm. And I'm so sorry for everything that happened in the days that followed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a big deal.
Yes.
Like, no parent should ever have to have this kind of conversation with their child. No child should ever feel this way from their parent.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a major, if not seismic, conversation for these two. And I love how Anthony says, I don't think I can go see her. Like, I don't, and like, he's crying. Ugh. And Violet's just like, dude, true love is worth it. Like, real mm-hmm. true love is worth it. Just go do what you got to do. Just go do it.
Oh, it's so good.
Like, screw everybody. And there's such growth, I think, for both of these characters and what they're doing, and what, and it's all reflective of the choices and of the information that their mothers are giving them. Mm-hmm. It's just as important to acknowledge the mothers as well as the fathers.
Yes.
Do you find that same?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
I mean, we didn't really get too awfully much of Kate Sharma's father acknowledged in this episode, but what we did get, yeah, is Lady Mary trying to apologize. Mm-hmm. And saying, you've always been my daughter. And I've loved you the same. Mm-hmm. I think she did a crappy job.
And not only that, we have both characters in this episode, both Kate and Anthony, saying at one point, all of this is my fault. Mm-hmm. This is all my fault.
Yeah.
The whole thing. I think it's important to have that mirroring.
Agreed.
And when you look at it and you see the circumstances, they both have these qualities that are reflective of each other, but they both are separate in their own ways. Mm-hmm. But they are really, they are brought on to each other in a way that they are alike, but also give them the permission to accept themselves as they are. Do you see what I'm saying?
I do.
Like, that's what makes this relationship work.
It's just so beautiful.
Yeah, that's the way that this...
And they can still be happy.
Yeah, the emotional math works because of that. Mm-hmm. Like, they can be themselves. They can accept each other for who they are and find love in that.
Yeah.
So that is that. All right, Marvin, you got anything else that you want to talk about for this episode?
No, I just loved it.
Where would you put... Did you enjoy season one more than season two?
No. I enjoyed season two more than season one.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yep.
Interesting. I don't know. I go back and forth.
That's okay.
I go back and forth on it. Because you're right. There's something so magical about the first season.
Yes. But the excitement of Whistledown was very different.
Yes.
In the first season. And we as the viewer were trying to figure it all out. But I really did enjoy this season.
Yeah.
I enjoyed them both. But yes. I liked this season actually more.
There's something magical about the first season. But there's something more real about the second. There's mm-hmm. something more specifically human about the second season.
Yes.
And I like that. I like, and of course, daddy issues, right? Like, you give me daddy issues, I'm in all day.
And Blake said, exactly.
So I can take that. And you give me all the conversation between Gregory and Anthony, and I'm gonna lap that up. Mm-hmm. Like, you just, such a great moment. Like, he just gives him a hug and talking about his love of his dad. And I didn't know dad. And what was he like? And,
yes.
You know, like, oh. I could just watch. I was this close to playing that at the top of our episode. This close.
Oh, I bet.
I was going to do it.
That's a Blake Lovin kind of thing.
but I didn't because, well, I think people would freak out if I did that. So I chose not to.
It's okay. We would have known why.
I know. So, Mary, last question I have for you. Do you think that the eight episodes was the right number for this season?
Yes, I feel very satiated. I feel like I got to see everyone I would have wanted to see. So I feel good.
If there's an option that you had to choose, like, okay, Mary, you have to choose over or under eight. Do you want more than eight or less than eight?
Oh, why? I like eight.
No, no,
eight
but
is
like,
great.
No, no, but if you had to say eight can't be the number. Like, eight is good. Okay, fine. But if you had to choose more or less, did you want to get more story out of this season or did you want to get less?
I would have done more.
Interesting.
I would have wanted a little bit more time with Kate.
Fair. Absolutely fair. I think I probably would go with a little bit less. I think I would go with the six episodes.
Okay.
A little less time on the other stuff, more time with Kate and Anthony, mm-hmm. And being more efficient with those things. Mm-hmm. So that's that. Okay, you ready to close it out?
I am.
All right, everybody, let's close out the show.
Thank you ever so much for tuning in to this season of Bridgerton with me and Blake. We have loved delving into the show. We cannot wait to delve into season 3. As we've said now countless times, head on over to our social media so you can stay in the know with us. We still are sharing all things Bridgerton, even though the season is done, even though our podcast season with the show is done. We are still talking about it, and we would love for you to check out some of the other podcasts that we do. And maybe you haven't watched those shows, but hey, if you like our style, maybe you'll like one of those shows.
My guess is that you probably will. Somehow, some way, we podcast about something that I think I know you're going to like. And the most important part is that you just find a community. Mm-hmm. You know, you find a community that loves the things that you love, and a great place for that is the Mary and Blake Facebook group. It's just, you know, that's over 3,500 people that are in there that just nerd out about the things that they love.
Yes.
Right. And that's a special place.
It truly is.
Because it's not just Mary and I dumping our content in there. It's like people having real conversations, like, you know, about a show that they see and that they love, or a mm-hmm. book that they're reading that they love. And it just so happens that this person over, you know, in California read that book too. And, you know, like, it's a whole thing.
Yes.
You know, and I love that. So please do get a chance. If you're a Facebook person, go to Facebook and check out the Mary and Blake Facebook group. You don't want to miss out on that. And of course, you know, we have all the other stuff that's happening at themaryandblake.com. It's all the podcasts, all the blogs that are there. And join the nerdclan.com too, where you get a whole bunch and a whole range of extras from Mary and myself, including an episode that we're going to end up doing, which is our top 5 favorite things to do during Droughtlander and during, you know, the drought of Bridgerton season 2, between seasons 2 and 3. Mm-hmm. We'll have an episode coming out of our top 5 favorite shows or movies to watch during that time. So all of those things are brought to you at jointhenerdclan.com. You don't want to miss out. Again, thank you for your patience. Thank you for all the things that you have done for us during this season. I really like this show, and it's an honor and a pleasure to podcast about. And trust me, I just like spending time with my wife. That's what it really comes down to for me.
Likewise.
And even though she makes fun of me constantly. Constantly.
And my love for tacos.
So we'll see you for next season, season 3. And that's that.
All right, everybody. My name's Mary.
My name is Blake.
Now go out there and brew some more tea.
This is your moment. Your moment to move forward and make progress. It's time to see where an education can take you. For over 130 years, Strayer University has been at the forefront of change, offering programs that help students like you get ahead and stay ahead, so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.